You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
Healthcare costs in Canada increased by $94 billion in the 20 years between 1984 and 2004. That's an increase of 250%. At first glance, these statistics suggest that our healthcare system is costing too much and is ultimately unsustainable. Sean Burnett decided to take these numbers apart and try to figure out the true cost of maintaining the Medicare system. Sean Burnett is a master's student in the Public Administration Program at the Johnson Shoyama School of Public Policy at the University of Saskatchewan, and he joins me this morning from Regina. Hello, Sean.
Good morning.
Now, $94 billion sounds like an awful lot of money. Why did costs increase so much since the mid-1980s?
Some of the things that I looked at, and we see that cost increasing, it's, you know, $94 billion. A lot of those changes were due to structural changes, such as population growth or inflationary growth as well, as you see that. So, those numbers are quite deceiving in that, while the cost was growing as well, we're seeing significant inflation across the country as well. So the changes were quite on par. Some of the data that I had in a paper that I wrote showed that costs actually, if you incorporate GDP growth, remained fairly constant over time. I looked at it between about the 60s when Medicare was first introduced up to the current date. And aside from during recessionary periods where you see a pretty significant decrease in the tax base, the cost has stayed probably relatively stable, kind of increasing and fluctuating between a 10 and 13% range instead of the significant range that you see when you don't incorporate those structural changes.
Interesting. Now, how do Canadian healthcare costs compare with other countries?
Well, I think that if you look at it across different countries, if you compare it to, say, the United States, which has a significantly different funding structure than we do, you see that their cost increased quite a bit more due to administrative costs that are required in order to have a financing structure that incorporates private insurance. So, but because the systems are so much different in terms of funding structure, it's helpful for us to look at other systems, more like the European systems, where they either have a public system similar to ours, or sort of the a mixed system with public and private financing. And if you compare to other countries like that, you see that all countries were experiencing growth in costs. And I think that just occurred with the continual development sort of in Western developed countries, where as countries gain more money and become more prosperous, they also start spending more on healthcare and ensuring that their citizens are well looked after and have good health.
So you've said then that the trend is upward across your European countries and Canada and the United States as well. In terms of the proportion of the GDP that people spend, is it roughly the same, or are we spending more or less than other countries?
When you look at it as a proportion of GDP, I think that you'd see a similar change. I mean, or similar percentage of GDP across countries. U.S. spending probably the most, and Canada kind of being at in the mid range. I'd say mid to high range, though. We do spend a large portion of our GDP, but it's not too disproportionate to what other countries spend.
What effect have tax cutting measures of these successive federal governments had on the way we crunch the healthcare numbers?
I think that's had a significant impact in terms of how we look at how we finance our healthcare system. It's been a growing trend that there's sort of a fear that healthcare is unsustainable and that the costs are increasing at a rate that we can't fund publicly. But what we see as well is when we look at the numbers, by cutting taxes, it looks like the share of cost of government costs going to healthcare are increasing, but we're actually just seeing a decrease in the tax base. So, for example, we see kind of in the fall of 2007, we see some tax cuts by the Conservative government that reduced federal tax base by $6 billion. And then we've seen that historically as well with previous tax cuts kind of around in the year 2000. And so we're, again, reducing tax cuts are reducing that tax base and increasing the percentage of money that's being spent on health proportionately to other government spending. And so I think that for me and what I was looking at, that was a big issue for me, and I thought that there's a big role for fiscal federalism to play in maintaining costs across the healthcare system. One of the issues, though, we see now, when I had originally done my research, it was probably in early summer, we've seen the economic situation change significantly from when I had originally done my research and reported my findings. And while we've seen those historic tax cuts, now that we're sort of in an economic crunch, it isn't good fiscal policy now in order to increase taxes at a time when people are sort of feeling that crunch, that economic crunch. So what we really need to look at is how we can stimulate the economy through fiscal measures and federal measures and kind of stay within that similar tax range that we have at the time, or currently, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Are there costs in the healthcare system that governments can control without negatively affecting the quality of care?
Well, we've seen that historically. There was a recessionary period where governments were experiencing high deficits in the 90s, and there was policy decisions made that we need to reduce healthcare costs. And so what ended up happening was extensive program reviews and eventually program cuts and reduced tax funding to the system, and policy decisions were made in controlling that money. And however, what we saw from that is that with the reduced amount of spending, we saw a decrease in the quality of care. And then when tax bases were increased and governments were out of fiscal pressure, they just needed to basically do catch-up and play catch-up on that money they had cut previously. So there's definitely room for policy decisions to affect monetary amounts in healthcare, but you do see that effect in quality. And what I would suggest is that there are policy decisions that could be made in investments with current tax dollars that can maintain the status quo, but then you can see areas of improvement within the delivery system so that you're maintaining your cost curve. However, you're improving quality of care by improving the delivery system, so by reducing waste in the system, such as unneeded diagnostic imaging testing or unneeded prescription or drug costs or unneeded wasted testing, that you have to go to your specialist and see. We see that around, as well as, improved infection control and other issues like that or other system changes. End-of-life care is another area where you can see some system changes that would have a significant impact on cost and would decrease the cost curve for individuals and would create a little bit of a buffer for managing where that money was spent within the system.
So overall, in your research, it seems that you've come out to the conclusion that public health care is, in fact, sustainable. Why is it important to articulate that and to get that message out?
Well, the reason why I think that it's important is I'm of the belief that health care is a fundamental human right. And I wanted to look at and articulate that by changing the fiscal structure, it's not likely that you're going to reduce the cost and spending in healthcare. However, what will happen is you'll dramatically change who's receiving care and who's paying in the system. And this isn't something unique to my research. There's a lot of other academics and research that have demonstrated this as well. And and to me, I think that's the issue is, when we introduce the privatized care as a means to mitigate costs, we're not really changing the cost of healthcare. We're merely changing healthcare for individuals, for those who are receiving care, and therefore affecting, that human right that individuals have in order to receive care and to live healthy lives.
As we head into a recession, do you think that there's going to be, we can expect to see more talk about unsustainable healthcare costs and more of a push to privatizing healthcare services?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely that sense when you're kind of in these fiscal crises and that ability for those that are opposed to private or public care to instill that fear, to create that fear, to build up angst and build up anxiety for citizens of in Canada to say, oh no, we can't afford this type of system. We can't, we need to introduce more privatized care, and it definitely fuels that when you're in an economic crisis, and there isn't that liberal ability to spend on behalf of governments, and there's not that both federally and provincially they can tighten up and say that we need to introduce more privatized care as a more efficient means and and increase that efficiency and low cost of care. So I definitely think that the economic crisis will kind of play into that. However, I think that we need to be conscious of what I was saying earlier as that changing that cost structure is going to lower the cost. If anything, if we see similar to the United States, which has quite a privatized system, it increases that administrative cost. And then as well, you lose that healthcare right that we've kind of come to value and that is kind of instilled in us in Canadians.
Maybe that taking from that the recession is a time that we should be advocating for public healthcare and not talking about dismantling parts of it.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. I think that that's something a really strong message that I think that Canadians should be hearing.
Well, thanks so much for joining me this morning, Sean. It's been really interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been speaking with Sean Burnett. He's a master's student in the Public Administration Program at Johnson Shoyama School of Public Policy at the University of Saskatchewan. And you can find his policy paper at policyalternatives.ca.